Okay, welcome to our little seminar workshop on math. They called it Alpha Math. I don't know where they got the title from. It certainly was not my title, but it certainly is about what I would call arithmetic, which is really not math. Arithmetic is quite apart from math, but I'm going to read to you some material that I wrote some years ago about arithmetic, which got me onto this whole business of making the distinction between arithmetic and mathematics so that people understand what it's all about and then can also teach their children how wonderful that system is and how excited one should be about it. You know, in reading, we teach the child the meaning and uses of the 26 alphabet symbols of which all of our written language is composed. In writing, we teach him to write these symbols. In arithmetic, we teach the child the meaning and uses of the 10 numeral symbols, a set of symbols as important to the development of our civilization as the alphabet. All arithmetic calculation is performed with these 10 remarkable symbols. That's the beauty of it. Just these 10 symbols do everything. Now that's quite a thing. How did we get there? Who invented these symbols? Who created them? Well, like the alphabet, our decimal place value arithmetic system is the product of a very long evolution in which man sought to find the best mental tools with which to express the tremendous intellectual potential he had within him. What man could do, provided he had the right tools and social conditions, can be measured by the incredible leap he made from the primitive agricultural civilization of the 1500s to the space age civilization of the 1990s. A span of less than 500 years. Of that leap forward, the greatest progress was made in the last 200 years. You know, when you think of the human race, the history, and how people lived, you know, with just transportation, horses and wagons, and for all of that period until just 100 years ago. You know, the automobile was invented only 100 years ago. And you realize that we are living in a spectacular age of incredible technological invention and growth, and a tremendous foundation had to be laid before that growth could occur, you see. This is an unbelievably short time when measured against the total span of man's existence on Earth. It indicates that for a long time, man had the intellectual potential to make that leap, but for centuries he lacked the mental tools with which to realize it. The two necessary tools were the alphabet and the decimal place value arithmetic system. Western man developed an alphabet about, well, you might say 2,000 years B.C., but he had to wait another 3,000 years before he got the most effective mental tool for arithmetic calculation ever devised by the human race. Again, its hallmark, its genius, was simplicity, a simplicity which took centuries to develop. In other words, today we do so much more with so much less. It's like the computer. You can do so much more now with so much less, you know. And the computers get smaller and smaller, have you noticed? You know, now you have in a laptop what used to take an entire room of these big mainframes. And now you can carry it around, do it on a plane or wherever. So, in about 2000 BC came the first tool to provide the great intellectual leap forward, the alphabet. The Greeks adopted it from the Phoenicians and developed their highly literate civilization, which marks the beginning of Western ascendancy. You had to have an alphabetic reading system before you could have widespread literacy, because before that, people were learning, the reading system consisted of first pictures. Then pictures became modified into ideograms or characters like the Chinese characters. And incidentally, if you ever study the development of the Chinese characters, say, for example, the word fish, the original looked like a fish. But then over the centuries, it was modified so that today's a character for fish doesn't look like a fish at all. You know, you really have, somebody has to tell you that's a fish, that stands for fish. And the Chinese have thousands of those characters which have to be memorized. So very inefficient system. And that was the kind of system that existed until the alphabet was invented. And the inventor of the alphabet made a great discovery. He discovered all of human language is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds. And so he said, why not create a set of symbols to stand just for the speech sounds of the language, and then we'll have a very simple means of transcribing the spoken language into a written form and an equally simple means of converting the written language back into its spoken form. And so the alphabet was invented, and now as the inventor discovered that all of human language is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds, how many speech sounds do you think there are in English? Does anybody here want to venture? 44, you're in the ballpark there. Only 44 sounds in English. So he was able to simplify the teaching of reading to make it to a point where anybody can learn to read, provided you're taught the correct method. Of course, in the United States today, they use the wrong method, the purpose of which is to dumb down the country, which is occurring very nicely. I mean, Americans have become so ignorant, dumb, stupid, that it's... But in any case, so the alphabet again represents something that permits you to do much more with much less. That's always the key, the simplicity. These inventions get better and better, you see. Well, the Greeks, as I said, adopted from the Phoenicians. While the alphabet promoted the literary arts, philosophy and science, and mathematics, the Greek method of arithmetic was not much better than the Egyptian. It used no less than 27 symbols, the 24 letters of the Greek alphabet, plus three archaic symbols, and made no use of place value. It was a purely additive numeral notation. The first nine letters represented 1 through 9. The next nine represented the tens, from 10 through 90, and the last nine represented the hundreds from 100 through 900. Thus, the number 125 required a symbol for 100, a symbol for 20, a symbol for the 5. The symbols, regardless of their order, all added up to 125. So that's how they did it, that 100, etc. Note that our number 125 adds up to 8, you see. It's the place value that we understand. It's 125. We understand its meaning because of place value or positional value. That's a very important concept to understand. While the Greek system was easy for addition and subtraction, it was difficult for multiplication, division, and fractions. To facilitate calculation, the Greeks, as well as everyone else in the ancient world, required the help of an abacus, a counting device derived from the primitive system of counting pebbles. In fact, the word calculate is derived from calx, C-A-L-X, the Latin word for pebble, you see, calx. You know, like calcium comes from the same word, or so calculate and calcium are related through calx. The pebble. Thus, in ancient Greece and in Europe, right up to the 14th century, specialists had to be trained to do the kind of arithmetic calculation which today is performed by school children with little difficulty. That is, school children who are taught normal arithmetic and not the new math, you know. If you're taught the new math, it's going to be as difficult as it was prior to the invention of the arithmetic system that we have. Yet the Greeks were able to develop Euclidean geometry and make other great significant advances in mathematics. How was this possible? Here we must make the distinction between arithmetic, that is, the art of counting and calculation, and mathematics, the science or philosophy of relationships. In Greek times, arithmetic was called logistic and was considered outside the domain of science and philosophy. Logistic was the tool of commerce. Mathematics, on the other hand, dealt with the abstractions of numbers and the relationships of geometric forms, most of which could be discussed rhetorically without the use of arithmetic calculation. Euclid used no arithmetic or logistic at all and exercised a strict taboo against using it, while other mathematicians like Archimedes and Heron used it at will without philosophical prejudice. Mathematics was considered the purest form of philosophy to be studied apart from any consideration for its practical use. Thus, while Greece made great advances in philosophical thought, its arithmetic was just as primitive as that of any other nation. On this subject, Tobias Danzig observed, and Tobias Danzig is the author of a book entitled Number, the Language of Science. He said this, quote, "One who reflects upon the history of reckoning, that is of counting, up to the invention of the principle of position, that is place value, is struck by the paucity of achievement. This long period of nearly 5,000 years saw the fall and rise of many a civilization, each leaving behind it a heritage of literature, art, philosophy, and religion. But what was the net achievement in the field of reckoning, that is counting, the earliest art practiced by man, an inflexible numeration so crude as to make progress well nigh impossible, and a calculating device so limited in scope that even elementary calculations called for the services of an expert. And what is more, man used these devices for thousands of years without making a single worthwhile improvement in the instrument, without contributing a single important idea to the system. When viewed in this light, the achievement of the unknown Hindu, who sometime in the first centuries of our era discovered the principle of position, assumes the proportions of a world event. Not only did this principle constitute a radical departure in method, but we know now that without it, no progress in arithmetic was possible, and yet the principle is so simple that today the dullest schoolboy has no difficulty in grasping it." You know, that's so interesting how they made all this progress in all the other areas, but when it came to just counting, they were still relying on counting pebbles, basically. That's what they were doing. They were counting units, counting by ones, basically. And you know, and that's an interesting observation too. Sometimes when you look at pictures, say of 1890, and you see they already had tall buildings with elevators. You had trains. You had gas lamps. But if you see a picture of the street, what do you see? Horses and wagons. You realize that people were still using horses and wagons until just about 100 years ago when the first automobile was invented. It just shows you how sometimes some areas of progress take longer than others. I mean, as far as building houses and inventing elevators and doing all kinds of things, it took until around, 1900 before the internal combustion engine was invented. The internal combustion engine, which is the engine that's used today in most cars, and which, of course, has produced this incredible automotive society that we have. So, the date of the first known appearance of a decimal place value notation in India is 595 AD. The oldest reference to the place value system outside India is found in a work written by Severus Sabak, a Syrian bishop, in 662. His comments about it are interesting. Quote, "I will omit all discussion of the science of the Hindus, a people not the same as the Syrians. Their subtle discoveries in this science of astronomy, discoveries that are more ingenious than those of the Greeks and the Babylonians, their valuable methods of calculation, and their computing that surpasses description. I wish only to say that this computation is done by means of 9 signs. If those who believe, because they speak Greek, that they have reached the limits of science, should know these things, they would be convinced that there are also others who know something." So at that time, they were only using 9 symbols, you see. The bishop referred to 9 signs because the sign for 0 had not yet been invented. The Hindus had derived the place value concept from their operation of the counting board, in which each column stood consecutively for ones, tens, hundreds, thousands, etc. And let me do a little drawing of what a counting board probably looked like. It would be like something like this. And here you would have ones, here you would have tens, here you would have 100s, here you would have 1,000, and maybe here you'd have 10,000, etc. This would be the counting board. And so they'd put, you know, units in there, say 3 there. So you'd have 3 ones, 2 tens, 5 100s, 1,000. So they would have 1, 5, 2, 3. That's how they got place value, you see. 1,523. That was the counting board, you see. Now what happens when you have nothing in the hundreds column? Somebody made a remarkable invention. Somebody invented a symbol for nothing. 0. Without 0, you would not have space age technology. Without 0, you would not have the kind of incredible technological developments that we have today. Without 0, you wouldn't have computers, because how do computers work? 1 and 0. All of our computer technology is dependent on that silly fool who invented a symbol for nothing. Isn't that incredible?
Actually, n-place value.
Huh? N-place value. Well, yes. Well, you had first.
Computer.
Yeah.
Also relies on place value.
Yeah, and the computer relies on place value. So this system is so ingenious, it's unbelievably beautiful. So that's the kind of thing you want to teach your child. First of all, the basis of this marvelous system. Not only that, but then they invented, you know, the 10 symbols. First there were the 9 symbols. Nobody had figured out how to notate nothing. How do you notate nothing? You got to be a genius to figure out that you could have a symbol for nothing. Anyway, so the 10 symbols, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, well, you could put the 0 up front. These 10 symbols are all you need to do every single calculation in arithmetic. A counting system. In addition, you count forward. In subtraction, you count backwards. In multiplication, you count forward in multiples. In division, you count backwards in multiples. That's all it is. That's what arithmetic basically is. So, let me go on. The bishop referred to nine signs because the sign for zero had not yet been invented. The Hindus had derived the place value concept from their operation of the counting board, in which each column stood consecutively for ones, tens, hundreds, thousands, etc. Somewhere along the line, it became necessary to designate a symbol for an empty column so that the reader could tell the difference between 32, where is that thing? 32, 302, 3002, you see. And that's how we were able to make such great use of the place value system, because of zero, which permits us to notate so easily these things. You know, today with the way we use the system as if we've always had it, you know, everybody takes it for granted. They don't realize the incredible intellectual inventions behind all of this. This is not something that just sprung up out of nowhere. Yes?
It would seem that the obstacle of comparing a missing zero would have been apparent right off. How long was it before they finally...
Well, that I don't know. It just says that, he says, Professor Dantzig, from all appearances, the discovery of zero was an accident brought about by an attempt to make an unambiguous permanent record of a counting board operation. So he thinks it was an accident, that somebody invented a symbol to say, well, this column is empty, you see. But we don't know when it happened. We don't know exactly what year or something like that.
They may have, when they were using the counting board, just understood it because they knew which column they were in because they were looking at the board. But if you wanted to transfer that to something else and you didn't have it set up on the board, what
right.
would you do?
You'd have to use some sort of symbols, you see. So that's the way it happens.
Almost right away, because when you're verbally saying the number 3020,
yeah,
you've left out the hundred.
That's right.
The word for
yeah,
hundred.
Yeah.
So as long as they could verbally say what it cost or what it was worth,
right,
or
how many things you were
right.
counting, whatever it was you were counting,
right.
Yeah. I would say that it would probably came about pretty rapidly after they had established place value, that they had to do that. That's right. But what seems obvious to us, though, you know, it took a while for them to figure out. Well, they were still, remember, what was in the counting board were units. In other words, it could have been pebbles. I don't know exactly what those early counting boards looked like. I haven't been to India. I've never seen a picture of one. So I don't know what they were putting in the counting board, whether they had a sheet of papyrus in which they put dots, or a box, an actual box where they had with, you know, columns and put pebbles in, or whatever it was, you know. But certainly it was a marvelous, marvelous invention which gave us place value. Yeah.
Thing in regards to the time that the humanities were developed versus how long it took for the mathematics.
Yeah.
In our time right now, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
The math is going to say the humanities are dropping out.
Right.
Zero.
Well, because they are using this tool, this marvelous tool, to the greatest extent. And but we shall never know for certain whether the invention of zero was an accident or a stroke of genius, but it was, according to Dantzig, quote, the turning point in a development without which the progress of modern science, industry, and commerce is inconceivable. So when you teach your child zero, make your child aware of this incredible thing. You know, today, kids dread zero because, you know, if they get a paper, if they do a paper and they get a zero, they're very unhappy. But you want to make sure that they understand to the extent that you can explain it. And incidentally, I'm reading from my book, How to Tutor. So you can get hold of this book and just read it to them. Read what I'm reading to you, you know. And the only reason I'm reading it is because I realize I've only got a certain amount of time and I want to make sure I cover everything well. And he says, and the influence of this great discovery, it really was not a discovery, it was an invention, was by no means confined to arithmetic. By paving the way to a generalized number concept, it played as fundamental a role in practically every branch of mathematics. In the history of culture, the discovery of zero, or I would say the invention of zero, will always stand out as one of the greatest single achievements of the human race. That's a remarkable, you know. Now, how did the Hindu place value system finally make its way into Western culture? It was carried there by the Arabs, who had adopted the Hindu system for their own use and brought it to Europe in their invasion of Spain. So, you know, up until then, they were using the Roman numerals. Very, very mixed system, difficult to use. The Romans used units, that is ones, plus symbols for more than one. You know, for example, they had, as you know, how the Roman numerals, you have 1, 2, 3, and then you have 4, and then 5, et cetera, et cetera. And 100 is C. That's very, very difficult. If you ever try to read, the Roman dates on books and things, you know, MCM, that's 1900, MCM, and et cetera, et cetera. So can you imagine multiplying that? Yeah. Multiplying one Roman numeral with another?
Carry the C.
Yeah, carry the C. But I mean, it just shows you how primitive things were way up until the 12th and 13th and 14th centuries in Europe. It should be noted that all of this took place after the rise of Christianity, the disintegration of the Roman Empire, and the subsequent sweep of Islam from Arabia to Gibraltar. The Moors established their rule in Spain in 747, but it took another 500 years before the place value system finally swept the old Roman numerals and the abacus from Christendom. Why did it take so long? Well, in the wake of Rome's disintegration, Europe had entered the period known as the Dark Ages, during which all learning and intellectual progress seemed to come to a complete halt. Now, I don't know how correct that is, but this is what we are generally taught. The awakening finally came in the 13th century. The first book to systematically introduce the Arab-Hindu system, it was really a Hindu system, not an Arab system. The Arabs simply used their own numerals. The first book was Leonardo de Pisa's Liber Abaci, published in 1202. So there, 1202. That's only 200 years before Columbus, you know, in the 14 or 3. Yeah, well, but it wasn't until 1500 that only Arabic numerals were used in commercial account books in Europe, and the Roman numerals were discarded altogether. There were a number of reasons why the adoption of the Hindu-Arabic system took so long. The main reason, however, was the difficulty people had in adopting a new set of symbols for their numbers and in using the symbols themselves in the calculating process. It was quite difficult for many accountants to make the leap from abacus counting, that is, one-to-one concrete counting, to symbolic or abstract counting, that is, counting by the use of the abstract symbols alone. That really took quite a leap in adjusting to, instead of using concrete units, ones, your fingers, something that you can see and actually count, to using abstract symbols. See, now what do these symbols mean? A symbol, certainly the number, you say 4, the number 4, what is it? It represents, it's a name, it's a quantity name. We name everything. And so we decided to name quantities. And so 4 is a name for 1, 2, 3, 4. You see, it's also a way, a means of counting. So actually, the symbol means more than just its position. Okay. Symbolic counting won out, however, because it was so much faster, and the place value system permitted all calculation to be done with only 10 symbols. And incidentally, if you look at the early mathematics books, they worked out all kinds of tables. They didn't have computers, they didn't have calculators, so if they want to speedily find out a multiplication, answer, all they had to do was look down the columns. And so you bought a book that had all of this done by somebody else who had sat there doing every possible calculation, and that's how they were able to become more efficient at it. It took time before people realized that the key to the most efficient use of this system was memory. Now, that's very key to understand, because in our schools today, they're down on memorization. And why? Because if you don't memorize the arithmetic facts, you're not going to be proficient at them. It's as simple as that. So rote memorization is the key to mastering this abstract system. The only way it can be mastered is by memorization. And memorization has to be done by rote. You see. And our schools don't like rote. They hate rote. Why? Because it works. It's efficient. That's the reason why. It's as simple as that. I hate to be so cynical, but I'm sure many of you have had experiences with the education system, but which might have made you just as cynical as I am about it. That's why you're here, right? Once you memorize the addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division tables for the first 10 numbers, you could perform any arithmetic calculation on paper with great speed. Once the key role of memory in this system was understood, the problem became one of developing the most efficient techniques of memorization, from which the notion of drills originated. By the end of the 15th century, all the techniques or algorithms, as mathematicians call them, which we now use to add, subtract, multiply, and division, were fully developed. In other words, modern arithmetic is scarcely 500 years old. Thus, the gap between the abacus and the computer is less than 500 years. It was the new arithmetic which made our technology possible. Pierre Laplace, the 18th century French mathematician, eloquently summed up the importance of the place value system when he wrote, quote, "It is India that gave us the ingenious method of expressing all numbers by means of 10 syllables, symbols. Each symbol receiving a value of position as well as an absolute value, a profound and important idea which appears so simple to us now that we ignore its true merit. But its very simplicity and the great ease which it has lent to all computations put our arithmetic in the first rank of useful inventions, and we shall appreciate the grandeur of this achievement the more when we remember that it escaped the genius of Archimedes and Apollonius, two of the greatest men produced by antiquity," unquote. And thus it is probable that the space age would have never come into being had the place value system and the symbol for zero not been invented. In teaching the child arithmetic, it is important to convey to him the genius of the system itself. Next to the alphabet, it is the greatest mental tool ever devised by man. Therefore, we should approach the subject with the excitement and interest it deserves. Any teacher who makes arithmetic dull does so because he or she does not understand its beautiful simplicity, its logic, and its facility, which permits us to do so much with so little. The 10-symbol place-value system is perhaps the diamond of human intellect. It and the alphabet are the child's greatest intellectual inheritance. Both sets of symbols represent the distilled genius of the human race. It is therefore obvious that such gifts must be presented in such a way as to make the child appreciate what these symbols can do for him in furthering his own potential and happiness. Now, how do you teach the kids, you know, what's the best way to teach memorization? Now, there are all sorts of ways to do. You know the tables, and you have your child memorize the multiplication table, the addition factor, all of the different functions, adding, subtracting, multiplying, division, etc. And so what is the best way to start teaching your child arithmetic? First of all, I would use concretes to demonstrate the facts themselves. First of all, the numbers. You have one. Now, I would use, since we all have jars of pennies, let's make use of them. Not only that, but since most of the arithmetic that you will be doing for the rest of your life, that child will be doing, for, involves money. Let's face it. That's what we're counting most of. We're not counting candy canes. We're not counting elephants. We're counting money. So I use a penny, one penny, two pennies. These are not manipulatives. These are simply showing them what, you know, so you have them count one, two, three. You put three, four. You say, count these, one, two, three, four. You're teaching your child to count, of course. You're giving him the number names, five, etc. One, two, three, four, five. He counts them, one, two, three, four, five. You say, and this is how we write five, you see. Now, once you teach the all of that, using the concretes for that, they give him a sense of what these numbers stand for. So when he hears seven, he knows what seven means. It means one, two, three, four, five, six, seven units, seven things. All right, so that's the beginning in teaching counting. You want to make sure that the child understands what these symbols stand for, and you use units. As I say, I prefer pennies because they're easy, you know, they're portable, you can look at them and whatever, but they're better than using something that's clumsy. Then you want to start teaching, then you want to teach an arithmetic fact. Say, for example, that two, I would teach them in a column form, starting, say, with 1 + 0, 1 + 1, 2 + 1, 3 + 1. Oh, no, I'm getting this wrong. It's 2 + 0. You see, etc. You do this in columns, and you may have a book that does that. In my book, I do that also, where I have all of the different the columns for the different facts. So the first column is 1 + 1. Then you have the second column, will be 1 + 1, 2 + 1, 3 + 1. The third column will be 1 + 2, 2 + 2, 3 + 2. You might start with the 0, 0 + 2, etc. 0 + 1, 0 + 0, you see. 0 + 0 is 0. Nothing plus nothing equals 0. 1 + 0, 1 + nothing leaves you with 1, equals 1. 2 + 0 equals 2, etc., etc., etc. You do all of these, and you could demonstrate each fact with a concrete. For example, if you want your child to know that 5 + 6 equals 11, you would have 5 pennies, 5, 6 pennies, and have him count it. He says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yeah. Now count them all together. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Ah, 11. You've proven the fact. He's not taking it on faith. He's taking it on fact that he has actually counted, and you say, this is the symbol we use for 11, you see. So you use the concretes just to make sure the child knows that the fact is a fact. For example, if you want to show him that nine times 5 equals 45, you're going to have 45 pennies for him to count. That's if you feel that you have to. If you feel that this child needs that additional information to make sure that it's a fact. Yes, yes.
This may sound silly, but does anybody know why we never chose the names 1-teen, 2-teen, 3-teen? We have 14,
right.
5-teen, we have 16, 17, 18, 19. Why did we decide on 11 and 12?
That I don't know. I guess that's linguistics. That you'd have to get into language more than anything else, you know. Now, in getting your child, once your child knows the fact and all of these are arranged using the symbols, you have to get the child to memorize the facts. So 4 plus, let's get something that's let's just say using 0 plus 6, 1 plus 6, 2 plus 6, 3 plus 6, 4 plus 6, you have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Your child will see the progression. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then 4 plus 7 equals 11. 4 plus 8 equals 12, you see. He'll see the patterns. The marvelous patterns in arithmetic. Now, when you want your child to memorize these things, first you have him state these. He goes over, 0 plus 6 equals 6, 1 plus 6 equals 7, 2 plus 6 equals 8, 3 plus 6 equals 9. Okay, now you want him to memorize it. What's the best way to memorize things? What you do is then you take a sheet and you cover the answers and say, okay, now tell me them. Now, if he gets to 3 plus 6 and hesitates, do you say figure it out? If you tell him to figure it out, what is he going to do? He's going to count on his fingers, right? You don't tell him to figure out. What you do is you flash the correct answer. Why? Because you want him to memorize the fact, not to be handicapped by this fact. You don't want him to gain the habit of counting on his fingers, you see. You want him to memorize the fact. And that's the way you memorize. We've been doing it the wrong way for years and years. We've been telling the kids to figure it out. And what do they do when they figure it out? They count their fingers. They're counting by units. You see? Yes?
I have a question. When you're saying that they should memorize all of this, is this just a foundation? So like you just said, that as they become older, they're not going to be counting, that it's something that's going to be...
Right.
That they can envision...
Exactly.
...these things.
Right.
Now, this is where I'm confused, because my youngest, when she was about 4, and maybe she knew how to count to 10. I'm sure she probably had already achieved that.
Right.
But just with, like, little candies or something.
Right.
In an exchange, I think there could have been 5, and maybe I even put 2 in my mouth, and then she got the other 3, and then she was, there was 5. And it was like, she didn't stop to ever figure that out. We weren't even at a place
right.
teaching anything to her or that
right.
giving her anything. And at a very young age, I've noticed with her, she does more things in her head without
right.
having gone through anything yet.
Well, most kids learn to count by ones. They learn to count by 2s very nicely, 2, 4, 6, 8, you know. They learn to count by 5s. They learn to count by 10s. But it's the 3s and the 4s and the 6 and the 7 and the 8 and the 9. That's where you have to concentrate on the memorization. Because most kids somehow learn the easy ones with virtually no, you don't have to do much. You don't have to, but it's the in-between, you know, the 6s and the 7s and that sort of thing. And the only reason why I recommend that you show the child the answer immediately is because that's what you want. You want that indelible imprint. So when the child sees 3 and 6, he knows it's 9. You know, it's automatic. It becomes automatic. And therefore, he gains confidence in his memory. People who have been told to figure it out all their lives rarely have confidence in their memories. They always think they're going to forget something, and so they constantly rely on counting by ones. And of course, that's a handicap in using a system that is so simple but requires memorization. Now, why do I say flash the correct answer? Well, supposing you decided to take part in a play. Your amateur group wanted you to take part in a play, say it was Hamlet or whatever. And you had to memorize the lines. And somewhere along the line in rehearsing, you forgot a line. Would somebody tell you to figure it out? No. What would you do? You'd look at the line. You'd look at it over and over and over again until you memorized it. And that's all that memorization requires, is seeing the fact over and over again until your child will say, don't show it, I know it, you see. That's what you want to achieve. And so that's why I'm saying, if you want your child to become very good at mental arithmetic, being able to add up a column of figures like that, then that's the way to do it. Now you might say, well, we don't need that anymore. We've got calculators. Well, that's true. We have calculators, but you don't carry a calculator everywhere you go. And also, if you don't have the facts in your head, you'll never know when you made a wrong, you know, move on the calculator. Yes. Sure.
And so what I finally had to do is I had to quit trying to teach the memorization fact. And I taught him how to count them in his head.
Right.
Not his fingers.
Right.
In his head. And he got so quick at doing that that I couldn't tell the difference between a kid that had memorized it and he that was counting them in his head. Now, whether he got to the point where he finally knew them, I'll never know that.
Yeah.
But I mean, he got so mentally, you know, I could get a visual picture of the blackboard in your head or whatever and count these objects.
Mm-hmm.
And he got so quick at it, but he could do that, but he could not memorize the facts.
Right.
So that was an
exception. Well, yeah, I tutored a very severely retarded young man, and I tried to, they didn't think he'd ever learn any arithmetic at all. And that was where I discovered that this method of flashing the correct answer was the way to do it, because otherwise he'd be, you know, I realized that he couldn't memorize anything, and the only way that I could establish memorization was to have him see it over and over and over and over again until he did memorize it. And even he had a limited range. But then I realized that, gee, for all these years, in every school in America, every parent says, figure it out. And that does not create memorization. That delays memorization. That creates almost an obstacle to memorization, because you're always going to rely on your fingers. You know, and that's what the schools are doing today. We've heard about the new math, you know? You heard of the new math? Problem solving. You don't have to memorize anything anymore. You got a little calculator. So Peter Jennings from ABC News went into one of these new math classrooms with his camera crew, and they, you know, they zoomed in on this little girl who was sitting there doing a problem. And you know what she was doing? Counting on her fingers. That's progress. You see, to Peter Jennings, that was this wonderful thing. She's actually counting on her fingers. Might as well go back to the abacus. What I'm saying is that we've been given this tremendous gift, this intellectual gift, by our predecessors, who are anonymous. We don't know who they were, but they gave us this magnificent, simple way of counting everything. And yet we're destroying the children's ability to use it. We're telling the kids that you got to keep counting by ones for the rest of your life, you know. Yes?
In fact, as a kid, I remember back to my grade 1 days in school. Before going to school, my mom worked with me to build a few simple additions. I remember sitting there in class having to do it on my fingers when the teacher said it was really embarrassed that I was doing it the silly way.
The silly way. Yes.
What they also teach is touch point math, where they have a number 4 and you have dots on it.
Oh, yeah.
You just touch 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, then you're counting by ones again, you know. I mean, and once you establish that habit of counting by ones, it's almost impossible to break. You know why? Because you were never permitted to develop confidence in your own memory. The only way that you can create confidence in your memory is to know those facts so well that you couldn't possibly forget them, or because they're automatic after a while. There are not all that many facts to remember, you know, in arithmetic. Half of them are easy to remember. As I say, twos, fives, tens, etc. They're easy to remember. So you concentrate on those that are a little more difficult. Those are the ones you should concentrate. Yes, ma'am. No, I'm not saying there's no hope, but I'm saying that, well, try. Try. Maybe at that age it's still possible for her to see the, to go over the columns with her and do what I recommend, that you have her read, first have her read all of the answers, you know, like 4 by 5, then cover them over. And have her go over them without seeing the answers. And should she then hesitate, say for 4 plus 7, she wants to start counting and say, just flash her the correct answer. Say, don't count on your fingers. If you don't know it, we'll show it to you. And show it to her until in her head she knows that 4 plus 7 are 11, you know. That's the way to do it. You can remediate, I think, at that early age, you see. I didn't know this until I was well in my 50s or 60s, so I was beyond hope. Yes, sir.
You could use flashcards or a trampoline.
Yeah, you could use a trampoline. Well, flashcards are good too, yes.
Don't you think that when numbers memorization are taught in columns like this, that kids learn to remember patterns instead of the actual facts, and then when they take them out of that pattern sequence, they have to go through
What I say is, first you do it in order, so they see the pattern. Then you mix it up. Then you mix it up, then you use flashcards, you use a variety of techniques. But what I'm saying is, though, whenever the child hesitates, flash the correct answer. Don't wait. Because the child gets to the point where they'll say, I know it, don't show it, you know, that sort of thing. Well, they'll get sick of seeing the same, you know, because they will have memorized it, you see. But yes, you can use, mix them up, flashcards, whatever you want to use, give them random facts to answer, but that's the way to do it. Yeah.
Well, what I always did too is I always put the flashcards with the answers on one side and the flashcard without the answer on the other. And I always told the kids, I said, you use the side with the answer until you sure you know the answer.
Right. Well, yeah. But what I would do with the other side of the card is not just put the answer, but put the equation, so to speak. Right. So that they see, because they have to visualize 4 plus 6 and 10 comes into their head, you see. That sort of thing. Yeah. Yes, sir?
It's just like a natural extension. Nobody figures out 0 through 9.
Right.
It's committed to memory.
Right.
Their name is committed to memory. There's many things that they just commit to memory and it becomes wrote in the.
That's right.
The basic equations should be committed to memory.
Yeah.
As readily as they've got 0 through 9 committed to memory.
Oh, exactly. I mean, when you count by ones, you're memorizing. It's all memorized. And it's because it's used so often that we memorize it easily. Yes?
I have to disagree fairly strongly.
Yeah.
When I was in first grade, I was in a school that didn't teach arithmetic.
Right.
Why not? Got moved near the end of first grade to another school. All of them because they didn't teach arithmetic.
Yeah.
I sat down, and I was way behind. And I sat down with these worksheets where they had little bundles of pencils.
Yeah.
And I sat there counting pencils to the end of all these.
Right.
And worked at it. But I have, since then, I've been far more numerous than my peers.
Far more what?
Numerous.
I see. Yeah. Right.
Et cetera. And, you know, but I learned by, you know, 4 plus 6 is 4 pencils plus 6 pencils.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that you should demonstrate.
I learned by counting ones.
Well, yeah, you do. You do have to first count them, but eventually you have to memorize 4 plus 6. You can't constantly think of pencils, you know.
No,
well, that's what I'm recommending here, and instead of pencils, pennies, because you can demonstrate it on. A parent can demonstrate it easily with using pennies rather than pencils. You're not going to have 48 pencils, you know, or 81 pencils for 9 times 9.
Sure.
But it's easy enough to have pennies. That's all I'm saying, is that pennies seem to me.
I don't think the underlying principle is ever lost.
Yeah, no, it's the same. What you're saying is the same. You learn the fact by counting the pencils, and I'm saying you can learn the same fact by counting pennies. That's
no,
all
I
I'm saying.
I learned the addition by counting. All these worksheets were, you know, 4 plus 6, you represent as 4 plus 6, obviously. And then above that was a little picture of a bundle of 4 pennies.
Yeah, yeah.
I counted, you know, in order to learn these relationships, I counted pennies.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you said earlier, get your kids to verify if you feel it's necessary. Verify the principle on it.
Oh, to verify every fact should be verified by concretes. Because then they know it's a fact. And you say, well, you can't keep counting ones all your life. You can't keep counting pennies all your life. Just remember that 4 plus 8 equals 12. That's what you have to memorize. That's the fact that you have to memorize. Oh, yeah, then you go on to multiplication and division, and then you teach all of the, you know, the carrying, borrow and paying back when you're doing subtraction. All those algorithms. Now, they've changed, too. You have some teachers, they make you cross out the top numbers, and but I learned the very simple way of borrowing and paying back. And, of course, there's a moral there, too. If you borrow, you got to pay back, you see. So,
yes, sir. I was going to say that with your suggestion to using the money with my children, of course, with the oldest one, it wasn't until he got, you know, what was supposed to be third, fourth grade, that where they're supposed to study money, I can understand that for your concept of using the pennies, you're achieving two things at once, where they're learning the value.
That's right.
Of money value.
That's right.
So, you know, that comes down, but if you start with that, then it just,
yeah,
you know, you're,
yeah, then you're killing two birds with one stone. And also then when you teach money, the dime, the nickel, the dime, and the 25 cent piece and all, and when you're teaching decimals, 100 pennies, and then, you know, how do you read $2.95, for example? You see, $2, then you have 95, that sort of thing. That it's very useful when you get into numbers, you get into the all sorts of different areas in which arithmetic is used. Yes?
In your opinion, what age would a child be ready to go from counting pennies to memory?
Well, it depends on the child, doesn't it? I mean, you know, some kids are more precocious than others, and, you know, every child generally starts learning to count at about three or four, wouldn't you say, where they... Yeah, that's all right. You know, at the beginning, they use concretes. They've got to understand that those symbols represent concretes. They represent concrete reality. Yes?
I teach in a classroom, and one of the things that teachers are always saying is we want to see your work, which means that we want to see you cross out the number and carry it.
Yeah, sure, right. That's
you
okay.
You started commenting, or at least when you were talking about that, you kind of shook your head. Is that a crutch doing that?
No, it's not a crutch. No. Those notations are very important in being able to subtract and multiply and all of that. You should use those algorithms that were developed, because that's what permits you to use these place value numbers so efficiently, you see. Like for example, let's take a... You know, if you're going to do something like, say, multiply 248 by 327, so you have 7 times 8 is 56, so what do? You have 6, and you carry the 5, you see. You see, 2 times 4 is 8, plus 5, 13, you see. This thing is not working. But you've got to use them. Now, when it comes to subtraction, it's in subtraction with the borrowing and the you know, like you have 123 and you're multiplying it, say, you're subtracting, say, 88. So you have to borrow 10, make that 13. So 8 from 13 is 5, but then you got to pay back. You see, you put the 1 down there. So this becomes 9 minus 2. So you've got to borrow and pay back again. That's 3. And that's 0. So, you know, that doesn't count. You don't have to put that down. So that's how we get borrow, pay back, you know. 1 from 1 is 0. But those are the things you teach the child in doing that.
It's interesting. I'm not familiar with that.
Well, that's why. Well, I'm older, you see, and that's the way we did it back in 1931. Huh?
The payback part is what's confusing me, because what I learned was is you just you cross out the two and it becomes the one, and then it's a remainder is what it is.
That's a different word.
Yeah, it's a different word, but the moral is here. Borrow, pay back. And yours, what is it? There's no moral. You see, so it's interesting that the earlier teaching was able to get this moral in there of borrowing and paying back, and the reason why they've gotten rid of it is the way they're getting rid of all morals in this country. They don't teach anything with morals anymore.
We don't believe in paying back anymore.
That's right. We don't pay. We go bankrupt.
Everything is
owed us. So you go borrow and go bankrupt instead of borrowing and paying back, you know. Yes, ma'am. Well, the new math, these are the hallmarks of the new math. First of all, you don't have to memorize anything. First of all, you learn concepts, whatever those concepts may be. Also, they use calculators. So the kids don't memorize anything and they use calculators. And if they don't memorize anything, they'll never know when they've made a wrong move on the calculator because it's not up there. Pardon? Oh, yeah, as far as I know.
But you wouldn't know.
But they also inject their own morality into it. For example, they'll say like, if you had 11 bananas and four, you know, and say you wanted to distribute bananas, and so you'd say, you have 11 bananas and you've got five people, how many bananas does each one get? So they don't divide up the last banana. They say, well, each one gets two bananas and the last banana goes to charity or goes to the food chain. You see? That's how they do it. That's the new math. And also they have your solve problems. What kind of problems? The environment, trees, how many trees did we cut down this year, you know, in America? That's right. In other words, they use arithmetic now to push, you know, evolution. How many billions and billions and billions of years, you know, has the amoeba been around? That sort of thing. So they're using arithmetic for their agenda, their politically correct agenda. In basic arithmetic, you're not teaching an agenda. You're teaching a method. You're teaching a system. You're teaching a mental tool. A mental tool. Another reason why they don't want the kids to be able to count very well or do arithmetic is because they don't want Americans to know what kind of a federal budget we have. You know? And then they want to make all of us dependent on H.R. Block to do our tax returns. You know, how many people can do their own tax returns these days? You can? Are you an accountant?
I did my first year's tax return.
Oh, where did you come from? Canada? Well, they have an income tax in Canada, don't they? Yeah. Oh, you're Canadian too? Yeah. It is simpler?
Yeah, like the provincial tax is just a pure fraction of your federal tax.
Oh, now that's simple. That would be so. I wish that's what we had in Massachusetts. Hey, that's a great idea. Please write a letter to the editor. Let Americans know how simple it is in Canada. I would love to have that system here.
Most dealings with government are much simpler than Canada.
Yeah.
I was just appalled at the way government forms are laid out, the way they're worded. You really never know if you've done anything correct.
You're right. And there's a reason for that. As John Taylor Gatto explained yesterday, the tax department believes that everyone is cheating. So whenever they want to get you, they'll have a means to do it. You can't help but cheat on this because you have to decide what your deductions are, you know. And so if you make a deduction in your favor, the tax people will say, no, well, no, that's not allowable. You see that? That's why Leona Helmsley was sent to jail because she took deductions which the department said were not allowable. She was willing to pay them what they wanted, but they wanted to use her as an example. They want to put the fear in the American people. You better pay up or else you better, you know, we can get you. That's the point. The government wants you to know that we can get you on your income tax or anything else that they favor. Yes?
I come across a lot of families. I'm in a support group, and I always get asked about the math, and especially for children that are like junior high age.
Right.
And maybe their child is really interested in the sciences.
Right.
And they're asking me, which I really don't have the best answer, I guess, but they're saying, well, how are they going to learn the, you know, whatever they need to take for the sciences? And the only thing I can pass along is that if they have the real desire and interest for it, it'll come to them easy, and they'll learn it just like maybe this. But what is your opinion, and how do they learn the higher advanced math?
Well, how they learn the higher advanced math is, well, first of all, if they've mastered arithmetic, then they already know the numbers. You do use numbers in higher math. We use it in algebra, we use it in trigonometry. But let me ask you this. How many people here use algebra frequently? Oh, gee, we've got a lot of engineers. How many people here use geometry frequently? How many here use trigonometry frequently? How many here use calculus frequently? Okay, we've got a couple. How many here use arithmetic frequently? Everybody's hand goes up. You can't survive without knowing arithmetic. It's as simple as that. It's a survival tool, if nothing else. But you can go through life without knowing algebra, without using algebra. I'm not saying don't teach algebra. What I'm saying, though, is there's a big difference as far as the life survival and utility is when it comes to arithmetic. Arithmetic is absolutely necessary. And that's why the system is tampering with it. They know how necessary it is for us to understand the tax situation, understand the federal budget, and so they want to keep confusing the American people. I wonder how you Canadians feel when you come to this country and see what's happening to us. Does it strike you that something is wrong with America at this point? Are you getting the... Well said. Well said. But, so you went from the frying pan into the fire.
Well, see, now you get competed more easily.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, what's the tax structure like in Canada?
You end up paying more tax.
You pay more, but it's easier to pay more. At least you know what your tax is.
I'll keep more of my money there.
Yeah. Well, that's the only good thing about our tax system is that you can keep reworking your figures until they're more favorable. But on the other hand, it also means that everybody cheats.
Well, the powers that be pay no tax, I guarantee
you. Yeah, that's right. If you've got enough money, you don't have to. You've got offshore bank accounts and gold and all sorts of things. Yeah. Well, any further questions? Have I given you alpha math